Blog Talk Radio.
What it do, bitches? How's everybody doing today? Lovely Monday here in New York. And by that I mean it's like 8,000 degrees outside. This heat wave is not fucking around, dude. And obviously in New York, it's not like our heat wave. And actually, speaking of heat waves randomly, we have a story in the show later on about heat waves in the Middle East. And good googly moogly, is it a problem? And it is linked to climate change, and I have some crazy numbers for you. But I'm fucking feeling it here in New York. We've had, you know, days 95 degrees plus for the past, like, I don't even know how many days. And every night we have these freakish thunderstorms that are, like, so powerful that I've never seen anything like them in my life. I say that now everybody who listens to Secular Talk in Texas and everybody who listens to Secular Talk in the Midwest is laughing at me. Like, okay, bitch. Lilith has told me stories of, like, the fucking crazy-ass thunderstorms they get there in Texas. And I feel like the worst thunderstorm ever for New York is, like, the least powerful thunderstorm ever in Texas. But anyway, I'm getting off track here, and I haven't even started the show, because that's what I do. A lot of stuff to get to today. We have some new polls out, and Donald Trump is in big, big trouble. I have a bunch of facts here that just, wow. Wow. Does it put it in perspective how much he has utterly collapsed? For the longest time, you guys know, man, I've been maintaining, oh, Trump, it's going to, you know, he's not as much of an outside shot as many people believe. Me and Nate Silver got into it over that. I say me and him got into it as if he was responding to me. He never responded. But I went after Nate Silver over that. But now it appears like these numbers are real, and now Hillary Clinton actually has a gigantic chance of winning the election. We have Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill trying to fight back against Donald Trump on the Sunday shows and making an absolute fool of herself. Trump spokeswoman Katrina Pearson, oh my goodness, forget about it. This was gaffe that she was trending on Twitter for at least a day. Jill Stein went on Fox News. I want to talk about that. And I don't know, man, a lot of great stuff. And later on, Christian fundamentalist radio host Brian Fisher has some thoughts on gender issues for us and gender equality. That should be a doozy. All right, so let's get started here. And we'll do that with the new trouble for Donald Trump. And that trouble is the numbers. Okay, let's do it. We have some new polls out here, and Donald Trump is in big, 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 big trouble for the election. So political reports. The NBC News, Wall Street Journal, Marist polls show Clinton with commanding advantages in Colorado, North Carolina, and Virginia, and also a five-point edge in Florida. In Colorado, Clinton leads Trump by 14 points. In North Carolina, Clinton's lead is 9 points. So they go on to explain how virtually all the swing states are either decently in Clinton's camp or overwhelmingly in Clinton's camp. So for the longest time, the media was saying Donald Trump has no chance, Donald Trump has no chance, Donald Trump has no chance. And I would come out here and say, you guys are a bunch of idiots. You got to look at the poll numbers. And the poll numbers at the time showed that he was right there. I mean, there were at the very least two instances where Donald Trump passed Hillary Clinton in national polls, but also in polls for very important swing states, and we did segments on it. And this happened repeatedly, again, minimum two times. I think it happened actually more like three or four times where the yo-yo effect happened and Trump was up. So I was the one who was saying from the beginning, everybody underestimated him all along, but he's real and the polls show it. And especially when you talk about the primary, he was leading in the polls the entire time and people were saying, no, he's not real. But he's leading in the fucking polls. What do you mean he's not real? That doesn't make any sense. Look at the numbers. He's winning. Well, now I make that same argument to go against Trump, which is it's reflected in the numbers here, man, and it's overwhelming. Now he's in real, real, real trouble of not just losing this election, but being absolutely positively blown out. So I want to give you some more facts here because these are so telling. Here's one that blew my mind. Only 20% of people under the age of 35 support Trump. Now, it's the case that people who are young are less likely to vote in the general election. So you can make a case that, yeah, he's losing millennials, but he was going to lose millennials anyway. Republicans always lose millennials. So what? He's going to happen to lose millennials by a little bit more than any other Republican, but it is what it is, and they don't turn out in large numbers anyway. That's a fair counterpoint, and that's a counterargument, in fact, I think I would make if somebody presented me with this number. But then we dig deeper, and it gets worse and worse and worse. So now we have another fact. An NBC Wall Street Journal poll puts Trump supporters with registered black voters at 1%. Now, we did stories about how Trump has 0% black support, but understand that was talking about specific states. So I think, if I'm not mistaken, the one where he had 0% recently is Ohio, which is that's a huge story. That's big news. 0% of black people like this guy. But 1%, we're talking nationally. Oh, wow. That's really bad. That's really bad. If I'm not mistaken, other Republicans historically post the realignment when they started running the Southern strategy and being openly racist, Republicans would get anywhere from like 5% to 10% of the black vote. But now you have Donald Trump getting 1% nationally. That's devastating. Now understand, Mitt Romney won, he didn't win overall, obviously. He won the white vote with 59% of the vote in 2012. That's a literal record. That's a record for the highest percentage of white votes in the country. So if he got that many and lost and got his ass handed to him, Trump would need to get way more than that. So he would need to shatter the record and then some in order to win because he's losing so badly in the other demographics. All the different minority groups, he's getting absolutely destroyed. And with women, he's getting absolutely destroyed. All right, and then here's the fact that really, really just solidifies it in my mind. Hillary Clinton is up in the last 20 polls, 20 national polls. Now, again, when you go to the swing states, she either has a decent lead or is blowing them out in the swing states. But now she's up in the last 20 national polls in a row. Trump's in trouble, man. He's in trouble. Now, then, of course, the question becomes, well, how did this happen? Why did this happen? I mean, it's clear to me, at least, that he's imploding. I said from the beginning he has a great chance of winning this election because the entire country is not feeling the establishment and the elite and the insiders. Hillary Clinton is all those things. So all you need to do if you're Donald Trump is run and repeat over and over and over, I'm the outsider, I'm anti-establishment, she's corrupt, she's crooked, crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary, crooked Hillary. And I would focus on all the things that are true about her. So I would focus on, the Clinton Global Initiative. I would focus on, why am I blanking on the actual name of it? The Clinton Foundation? Yeah, it's the Clinton Foundation. I would focus on the Clinton Foundation if I was Donald Trump. I would focus on the amount of money she's raised in her career, and you could even go after the entire family and say, the Clinton family, when you include Bill, they raised over $3 billion in special interests in their lives. That's a fact. Somebody tracked it. This was widely reported. You know, I would focus on, hey, she flip-flopped on issues after taking money from special interests. I mean, look, for example, at her position on universal health care. She was for it. She fought for it. She took money from the health industry, and then all of a sudden she flipped, and now she's against it. Look at the bankruptcy bill. She was against a bill that biased bankruptcy laws in favor of big corporations. After she ran for senator in New York, she raised money from the same institutions, and then look at that, all of a sudden she flipped, and now she's in favor of that bankruptcy bill, which biases the laws in favor of corporations. I would just hammer her over and over and over on being an insider, on being corrupt, and I would only focus on that stuff. And yet, you can attack her on her shitty foreign policy decisions and everything else, but if you do that, you have to be very intelligent about how you do it and the arguments you make. Donald Trump imploded recently when he's out there saying President Obama, quote, founded ISIS. That's just not true. You can make an argument that he made the problem of jihadism worse by killing so many civilians in the Middle East and being too interventionist. That's an argument you can make, and I'd agree with you if you made that argument. That's not the argument Trump makes. In fact, when people present him with nuance on that issue, he's like, no, he founded ISIS. He founded it. Founded. Founded. He says Crooked Hillary is the co-founder of ISIS. He got into a fight with Khizr Khan. Khizr Khan is the father of a Muslim American soldier who died fighting for us. So this is a guy who's off the fucking rails. And Teflon Don, who went up in the polls every time he said something that was politically incorrect in the primary, now every time he says something that's not just politically incorrect, it's incorrect. Every time he says something incorrect in the general election, people are like, fuck this guy, man. I'm telling you, I know it's anecdotal, but again, the polls are reflecting it too. But I've had people in my life, people who are right-leaning, who are fairly conservative, who've reached out to me, and they're like, he's a crazy person. Who says that? And these are people who, they're not necessarily fans of Obama, but they're like, dude, you don't say that he fucking founded ISIS. That makes no sense. And then the further you follow his argument, the less sense it makes. Like, he would argue, the Iraq War, it's the Iraq War that helped found ISIS. That's actually true. But guess what? Obama was against the Iraq War. And he wasn't even able to vote on it. So what are you saying? ISIS was technically created in 2006. Obama got elected in 2008. What are you saying? What you're saying makes no sense. So I know a lot of right-wingers are like, geez, that's crazy. I can't go with him there. So I'm telling you, it's affecting him. It's affecting him big time. And who knows? I've said for the longest time it's going to continue to be the yo-yo effect. There's still a very decent chance that it will continue to be the yo-yo effect. But I don't know, man. It's possible that it just stays with these similar trends here. I mean, I guess the debates are the only thing that could really start swinging it back and forth again. But peer like Hillary Clinton has taken a very, very solid lead. And her strategy seemingly has been, while he fucking implodes and goes around the country and makes an ass of himself, I'm just going to www.shutthefuckup.com, and then it'll be okay. Kind of true. That's kind of worked out. And it's not like Hillary, you know, hasn't had her fair share of scandals since Trump has been making an ass of himself. We covered the story the other day about how the Clinton Foundation is involved in pay-to-play, and it's open corruption and open bribery. Bill Clinton's out there saying, oh, this is all nonsense, just like the email scandal. No, it's not, jackass. And by the way, the email scandal, again, the issue behind that was she's not following government rules. She's weakening our security and opening it up so that foreign agents can see what's going on there. And yes, what's actually in the emails? There could be pay-to-play corruption because that's the nature of the Clintons and what they've been doing, and we have evidence of it. So this idea that it's nothing and you can scoff at it is ridiculous. She's also been pandering to fundamentalist Mormons. I mean, you want to talk about abandoning your base? I've never seen a clear example of abandoning your base. All of a sudden, you're trying to target voters in literally the most Republican state in the United States of America? That's Utah, because they're fundamentalist Mormons overwhelmingly. She's like, oh, let me tell you, religious liberty. I'm on the side of religious liberty. Let me quote fucking Mormon figures to you and mention Joseph Smith and do all this shit. And meanwhile, liberals are there like, oh, you fucking idiot. This guy's imploding and you're running further right. Why would you not just be a normal human being and say decent things and say things that are popular, liberal things, and try to get elected that way? But no, of course not. So she is even allowed to make these mistakes because she's largely staying out of the media, and he's fucking everywhere, and the media can't stop covering him, and every other thing he says is stupid. So honestly, if she just stays quiet the rest of the way and does a decent performance in the debates, it'll be President Hillary Clinton soon enough. And, I mean, I guess the only upside of that is you avoid President Apocalypse, Donald Trump, but there's not much else to look forward to, in my opinion, about that. That's also something that I will dislike immensely. Okay. All right, now let's go to Claire McCaskill, and man, I'm going to be annoyed by this one. Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill went on Fox News Sunday, and she responded to Donald Trump claiming Obama founded ISIS. Let's watch.
I mean, he isn't criticizing or in any way denigrating the work of the military. He's saying that President Obama and Hillary Clinton made some bad decisions that have led to the present situation.
Well, there's a lot of reasons that ISIS rose up. One of them was a status of forces agreement known as SOFA that Bush negotiated. We couldn't leave our troops in Iraq, even if the president wanted to, because the parliament in Iraq was refusing to give them immunity. Now, Trump probably thinks the SOFA, the Status of Forces Agreement, is a gilded couch at Mar-a-Lago. He probably doesn't even know what SOFA is. But that was a very relevant part of this. It was also important to realize that Assad, by what he did in his country, allowed ISIS to move into what was then Iraq, al-Qaeda in Iraq, into Syria and get strongholds and recruit. That was the work and support of Putin, who is Trump's best buddy. So you can say Trump and his friend Putin are the founder of ISIS, which probably would be more accurate than calling out the commander-in-chief in that way.
Stop. Stop. You sound like a moron, because you are. So think about it. Donald Trump goes out there and, you know, basically stabs himself in the gut repeatedly. He's like, Obama founded ISIS. He founded it. He's the founder. He founded it. Crooked Hillary, co-founder, co-founder, co-founder. Says it over and over and over. When Trump goes and does interviews, people offer him an out and give him nuance. Hugh Hewitt was like, I get what you're saying. They created the vacuum and, you know, maybe armed the wrong people, yada, yada, and bad decisions led to rise in ISIS. He's like, no, wrong, founded. He founded it. Founded it. That's weird. ISIS started in 06. Obama was elected in 08. The fuck are you saying he founded it? It doesn't make any sense. So he says egregious, horrible, disgusting, dead wrong things. How does idiot Claire McCaskill decide to rebut that? She goes out there, she's like, oh yeah, you founded ISIS. Donald Trump founded ISIS. Donald Trump founded ISIS. Donald Trump founded ISIS. That's going to be your argument? Go sit outside. Go to timeout. What the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you do that? It's like the Democrats try to lose elections. Whenever Republicans give them the best, most obvious, clear out ever, like, oh, just be somewhat normal and you win this election. The Democrats are like, how can we fuck this up? Let's find a way to fuck this up. It's almost like Trump is trying to throw the election, and the Democrats are like, oh, yeah, we're going to make equally idiotic arguments and try to throw it also. Now, thankfully, nobody gives a flying fuck about Claire McCaskill, so this won't be as big news. But don't make this argument, man. What are you doing? What a stupid point that is. So let's think about this for a second. First of all, she buys into right-wing framing in some respects. When she's like, well, you know, ISIS rose because of George W. Bush's Status of Forces Agreement, which meant we left Iraq under Obama. But remember, Bush negotiated the deal, so Obama just followed through. You clown. Do you know what argument you just made? ISIS rose up because we left Iraq. That's a right-wing argument, you prick. Why would you make that argument? That's not true. I love how people love to do revisionist history. If we had only stayed in Iraq, ISIS wouldn't have rose up. But they don't want to do the revisionist history in a way that would actually be accurate and go a little further back in time and go, oh, the problem with ISIS rising up in the first place was that we invaded Iraq in the first place. They go, no, we should have invaded, and then we should have stayed there, what, forever? Because whenever you leave now, there's going to be – everything is going to go to shit because you already broke the region when you did the invasion. You toppled the authoritarian strongman who was a terrible guy, but he stabilized the region. and then made it so that a worse monster and a worse group comes up, fills the void, and, like I just said, makes it worse, is a bigger problem. But she buys into the right-wing framing. That's right, you know, we got out of Iraq, that was the problem. No, we got into Iraq, that was the fucking problem. So she starts off by buying into right-wing framing, and then what does she do? She goes, well, you know, if anything, who I would blame for the creation of ISIS is Assad and Putin, and henceforth Trump, because he knows Putin, or he's maybe kind of done business with him, even though there's really no evidence of that, but the Democrats are running with this because they love red baiting nowadays, apparently, when it's against Trump. So I guess we'll blame you. Think about how disconnected and goofy an argument that is. The United States has funded Saudi Arabia for all this time, a Wahhabi government, same ideology as ISIS. Saudi Arabia has funded many of the Syrian rebels, who are Islamists and jihadists. We have also trained and armed some Syrian rebels, and guess what ended up happening with them? We thought we found the moderate rebels. Soon as they got into Syria, they turned over their guns to al-Nusra, who was al-Qaeda in Syria. So we arm them, we fund them, and then Claire McCaskill turns around and goes, I'm going to blame Assad, the Shia Alawite leader in Syria, who has been fighting ISIS this entire time. He's been fighting jihadists and Islamists. Now, you could dislike him for other reasons, and you can say his civilian casualty, you know, rate is too high, and I would totally agree with that. But when you say, I'm going to blame him for ISIS, that makes absolutely no sense. Russia, same thing. You know, the idea that, oh, man, you know, it's like they've been on the side of ISIS all along. They created them. They are fighting them, and they've been the entire time. Now, the U.S. has fought them at times, too, but understand that's also after we happen to, whoops, arm them, or at the very least, arm jihadists aligned with them. So, but no, truth is irrelevant because she just wants to blame the people that she wants to blame. In other words, she's pulling a Donald Trump. I somehow want to blame Vladimir Putin and Assad, even though they're fighting ISIS, and we've armed jihadists and Islamists and Syrian rebels in the region. I somehow want to blame them and Trump, so I'm just going to throw their names out there and say, aha, you're to blame for ISIS. That makes absolutely no sense. And Trump's argument is actually more correct than her argument. Trump's argument is still utter bullshit. Because, again, ISIS was founded in 2006. Obama was elected in 2008. You can make the claim his policy decisions made things worse and created more jihadists. I would make that argument. So that's a true argument, but that's a different argument from he founded it. But either way, there's a bigger grain of truth in the idea that Obama's policies made ISIS worse than the idea that you blame Assad, you blame Russia, and you blame Trump for the rise of ISIS. No, you blame Trump for fucking stiffing his workers and paying some workers less than minimum wage and being involved in 3,500 lawsuits and going bankrupt minimum 5 times. You blame Trump for those things and you blame him for being a buffoon. You don't blame him for the rise of ISIS. That's a stupid point. You know it's stupid. Stop being ridiculous. Okay. All right, let me take a quick break right now, and then I'll come back and I'll get into all this other stuff. We got a lot to get to. So Donald Trump is obviously falling massively behind Hillary Clinton, so he took to Twitter and had a meltdown and ranted about the media. And Trump spokeswoman Katrina Pearson went on CNN, and she basically shit herself on live TV. That's the gist of it. All right, so stay right there. We'll be right back with all that and much more.
Say, I don't look weak, 'cause when a wolf cry, wolf, you still plastic handgun. If you act foul, you get 2 shots and 1. I'm at your face like man come. You need to soften in Roseanne, son. Hey, you cannot reach me on my Samsung. I'm busy fucking the world and giving the universe my damn tongue. Crazy motherfucker, I am one. But the crazy thing is, I began one. I'll write bricks, I'm straight like it, jumping back to 36, six. Big house, long hallways, got 10 bathrooms, I could shit all day, nigga. And we don't want no problems, okay, give us some, go to a goblin. Yeah, it came on the stage, I fuck around and leave a nigga brain on the stage. I got that for that, I take it from my bed, from my car.
What the fuck is up? Is Gucci leather jeans? J51 no beady, but this car fit in the city. Yeah. So I see some no Nike, but just Gucci Louis Vuitton. Excuse me, Gucci Nike, shit, no man. Why the fuck you buy shit? The llama cocking on the bandana, go car and channels. No, we do not talk to strangers. Just cut off these niggas' fingers. Gucci's on the dangerous. Cocaine, codeine, and major, though. This AK-47, I hit you. And we're from the anchor, love. This ain't finding me alone. Put on devil's fingers, man.
The money is the motive. Fuck with the money, it get ugly as coyote. Okay, I'm reloaded. Better pull it in.
In the wake of some new polls showing Donald Trump falling massively behind Hillary Clinton, he took to Twitter and he had a meltdown. So he sent about 10 tweets lambasting the media. And remember here, the reason why he's upset is clear. In one poll, he has 1% support among black people nationally. He has 20% of millennial support. He's down in virtually every single swing state. It's really not looking good. The last 20 national polls, 20, have Hillary Clinton up. I think she's up by about 8 points on average. Buckle up. He's losing his mind because he's beginning to realize I might actually get blown out in this election. So he went on and on about how it's not his fault, it's the media's fault, the goddamn media, 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 media. And one of his tweets was this: it is not freedom of the press when newspapers and others are allowed to say and write whatever they want, even if it is completely false. Come on, Don. Don, you have to stop saying stuff like this, man. So, first of all, yes, there's something called libel. There's something called slander. In this case, since it's written word, it would be libel. If they're being malicious and misleading on purpose and attempting to damage your reputation, and it is not true. Now, libel is notoriously hard to prove, but it is a thing. So if Donald Trump is so sure that these people are malicious hacks lying on purpose and destroying his reputation and saying things that are absurd, well, you can sue Don, and if you win, we'd know for sure that you're right. But here's the thing. If you did sue, you would lose, and you're probably not going to sue because you've already tried to sue people before with libel cases, and you got your ass handed to you. So there are ways to remedy that if indeed that was happening, that they're lying about you and they're doing it on purpose and they're malicious and they're maligning your reputation. Yeah, we can redress those grievances. but you don't have those grievances. See, they're saying things that are true, they're saying things that are accurate, and you don't fucking like it. So what do? This is how you lash out. It's not freedom of the press when people get to say whatever they want. Kind of, yeah. Yeah. But see, that's the thing. He would, in his mind, anything that's against him, he would just declare that's libelous. Even if the thing is true and it's accurate and it just portrays him in a negative light, he'd say that's libelous. So I have to shut that down. That's not legitimate freedom of the press. This reminds me of Erdogan. Remember Erdogan's quote? He's like, freedom doesn't mean freedom to insult. Of course it does, you fucking epic moron. But these guys are such simpletons that they haven't really done the basic, you know, mental exercise and haven't thought through it enough to realize, oh, wait, that is part of freedom of speech. Again, if it's genuinely libelous, it's not. But libel is super hard to prove, and it's super rare because oftentimes when people make an argument against somebody else, there's a grain of truth in it. And look, I mean, as somebody who's somewhat of a public figure, it's like he acts like, you know, oh my God, everything anybody's ever said against me is so wrong. You should see the shit people say against me. Oftentimes it is libelous and it isn't true. And I still am like, what are you going to do, man? What are you going to do? But see, he gets so, it's thou doth protest too much in his case. Because, and you know what specific article he was angry about here? Now, obviously, the reason why he's already fed up, like I said, is the poll numbers. But there was an article in the New York Times. All they did was talk to some people from within the campaign. And the people within the campaign are like, yeah, you know, he's exhausted. He's beginning to realize he might not win. He's basically uncoachable and uncontrollable. So in the article, people were basically saying stuff that any of us could have guessed from the outside looking in. Yeah, he does look tired. He sounds fucking sleep-deprived in his speeches when he can barely stay coherent. You know, he does look like, and he's even mentioned it in some interviews, like, oh, if I lose, I will take a nice long vacation, but still keep doing what I'm doing in terms of spreading the message. So it's not, there was nothing particularly against him in that article either. It was just like, oh, this is what's happening. And he's still like, how dare you? And that's one of the things they mentioned in the article. Any little perceived slight, like the most random things will set him off. Like Marco Rubio said, if I get elected, because again, he's running for a Senate seat in Florida again. He says, if I get elected, I'm going to hold both parties accountable. I'll go after the leadership of both parties. Rubio said that when campaigning in Florida. Apparently, Trump was obsessed with that for like a day and a half. He's like, how dare this fucking guy say that? He's going to come after me and hold leaders accountable in both parties. How? Like, that's something he would say about anybody, even if it wasn't you, Donald, who's fucking, you know, trying to become president. Even if it was a different Republican nominee, he'd probably still say that. But at the littlest things, oh, my God, this hurts me so much. The article, there's been articles that claim accurately that Trump's involved in 3,500 lawsuits. There are articles recently about small businesses, contractors, like, he fucking keeps stiffing us. He owes us $200,000 for paint jobs we did in some of his properties in Florida. All these things, he's like, I'm not going to say anything about that. They write an article about how, oh, your campaign's in disarray. He's like, oh, no, it's not. Liars, liars. This isn't freedom of the press. This isn't freedom of the press. He's such a weird character. And understand, he has a media blacklist. That's scary stuff for somebody who's running to be president. This idea that, oh, if he gets elected, on day one, he understands free press, free expression, First Amendment, whatevs, dude, no more media blacklist. He's going to allow everybody in and all this stuff. Well, as he's running, he's not. I mean, you would think that people would deduce that if I'm running for president, maybe I should run in accordance with the same rules and laws I'd abide by if I actually become president. In other words, I'm open to any media outlets. No, at his campaign events, he doesn't give credentials to BuzzFeed, Washington Post, Politico, the National Review, a right-wing outlet, Univision, the Daily Beast, Fusion, the Des Moines Register, Mother Jones, and more and more and more and more. He doesn't give credentials to right-wing outlets, to centrist, vanilla, establishment-y outlets, to liberal outlets. Anybody who says something bad about him, he's like, done, banned, censored. And then he turns around and a lot of idiot people who are rightly anti-social justice warrior go, oh, he's the social justice warrior slayer, I love him. He's the right-wing social justice warrior. He's the right-wing PC police. He bans people who hurt his witty-bitty feelings. He sued Bill Maher over a joke. He sued The Onion over a satire article. He's saying now, he's writing tweets about how that's not freedom of the press. At what point will free speech warriors go, oh, this guy's the antithesis of everything we want? just because he's a dick to a group of people that we also don't like doesn't mean that he actually abides by the principles and ideals that we supposedly believe in. But see, that's the thing. It's not about those things for those people either. But I don't want to get into that. That's a side rant and a separate conversation. But just know, as he bans all those outlets from covering him on the campaign trail, he allows white nationalist radio shows to do it because they're more likely to fawn over him. They're more likely to talk about, oh, how great he is. So he's like, okay, you like Trump, you're good. You don't like Trump, you're bad. And this is how this guy operates. He's an authoritarian through and through. And people, we shouldn't brush this under the rug or look the other way when he's out there all the time dropping clues. Constitution, I don't care about the First Amendment. This isn't to say Hillary Clinton is good because she's not. But this is to say that this guy is a real, real, real threat to free press and free expression, and he's letting you know about it. All right, more. Spokeswoman. Trump spokeswoman Katrina Pearson went on CNN, and she basically shit herself on live TV.
That ISIS actually started in 2004 with AQI, al-Qaeda, in Iraq, and then morphed into, in 2006, Islamic State in Iraq. So this is not something that started during the Obama administration. There is an argument to be made, and I think in these conversations on television, many people have said that there is a path there for Donald Trump, but he's saying that he was sarcastic, but not that sarcastic, about something that happened in 2004.
Well, if you're moving into, if you want to go way back, we can look at the troop surge. And after 2007, al-Qaeda was essentially in ashes. It was Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton who then destroyed the entire rollout by wanting to pull out early, announcing their plans, ignoring intelligence. And that is the reason why ISIS is a global issue.
Barack Obama in 2004, is that what you said?
No, I said afterwards. After the surge.
Mm-hmm.
When al-Qaeda was in ashes, entering Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, remember, we weren't even in Afghanistan by this time. Barack Obama went into Afghanistan, creating another problem. It was Hillary Clinton and her in Libya, which was also a reckless decision to create that vacuum. They armed the rebels, and they're even funding them now.
Okay, so you're saying Barack Obama took the country into Afghanistan post-2009. Is that what you're saying?
What I'm saying is the policy
you just said that we
of Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, that was Obama's war, yes.
No, 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 no. How do you not know this? That's really, really embarrassing. Your entire job is to be a spokesperson for Donald Trump and to talk about political issues. You don't know that Afghanistan isn't Barack Obama's war? Now, I was actually willing to give her a pass early on, because when she first mentioned it, I was thinking, no, there's no way that she doesn't know that, because maybe she just slipped up and she meant to say Syria, because it's true that we weren't in Syria, and then Obama got us into Syria, and understand he got us in a weird way. We're doing more traditional airstrikes, and there's special ops boots on the ground, so it's not an all-out ground invasion, but yeah, we're still in Syria. That still counts. So I thought, no, she meant Syria, and she slipped up, and she said Afghanistan. But then the host there did a great job and basically asked for clarification, and she's like, no, that's what I mean. That's Obama's war. Yeah. No, it's not. Dude, we were in Afghanistan in 2001. Now, to be fair, even though this is a separate point, it is true that President Obama drastically increased troop levels in Afghanistan. And even when he drew them back down, we're at about 9,500 or so troops right now, which is still a lot of troops in there. And the war hasn't worked, and the Taliban controls more territory, and it's been an abject failure, and we're wasting money and resources and U.S. lives, and we've bombed hospitals and went, whoops, our bad. So it's still a horrible war, and Obama escalated it. But that being said, again, that's a separate conversation. You just said Obama got us into Afghanistan, and it's Obama's war. Katrina, you're going to have to leave this job. If I'm Donald Trump and I watch that, if I'm anybody in his campaign, if I'm running the campaign, I'm like, we got to get rid of you. Hashtag Katrina Pearson history was trending on Twitter for at least a day after this. You were one of the number one, if not the number one, trending topic on Twitter because of your lack of knowledge in politics when your job is to talk about politics. Done. You got to go. But then again, this is Donald Trump's campaign. He doesn't give a fuck about history. He doesn't give a fuck about facts. So why not have a spokesperson who is in the exact same boat as him? So we'll see here. But she's done similar shit to this before where she said preposterous things. But this is just the most extreme and the least true of all the things she said. So I would be floored if they didn't do something here with her. But there you have it, man. This is Trump's view of history. Obama founded ISIS, as he repeated a million times. Obama started the war in Afghanistan, and Obama invented the KKK, rape, and Nickelback. Guilty on all counts. All right, now let's go to a happy story here. ISIS defeated. Kurdish fighters liberated the Syrian city of Manbij from ISIS. We have some incredible video here of the celebration immediately after. Let's take a look at that. Warms my heart. So for everybody who was listening on the live show and they couldn't see what was happening there, there were men cutting their beards. Of course, ISIS forces them to cut their beards. There's other awesome photos of women and men actually smoking cigarettes because naturally ISIS would kill you if you're caught doing any kind of substance, and including cigarettes. So they're smoking cigarettes. They're smiling. They're dancing in the street. The men are cutting their beards. You have people hugging some of the all-female Kurdish fighting forces, which helped liberate them. You have women burning the, I think it's called the niqab, which is the most oppressive of all the different dress, Islamic dresses for women that they're forced to wear. Let's be clear, it's not by choice. I mean, it's not by choice in a lot of countries. Never mind ISIS territory is definitely not a choice. Where it's like, you got to cover everything. I swear to God, if I see a fucking eyelash, I will lose it in my pants. So you got to stay covered up. So they're burning that. I mean, it was just, it's scenes of absolute joy. So look, people feel it. They know it. They get it. This is a terrorist organization. They're immensely oppressive. They're even oppressive by fundamentalist Muslim standards, where they you could be uber conservative within Islam, and these guys come along, and all of a sudden you're like, whoa, 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 what the fuck is going on here? So this is an absolutely fantastic video. And by the way, credit, it wasn't just Kurdish forces, although they played a huge role in this. There were also some Arab forces as well who helped liberate Manbij. And I've said from the beginning, and it's still my position today, I think the U.S. getting involved has oftentimes been counterproductive, and we've done the wrong things, and we've proven over more than a decade we don't really know what we're doing in terms of getting the right outcomes in situations like this. But I have no problem whatsoever giving aid to and helping Kurdish forces who are obviously consistently fighting ISIS, and even some Shia militias, so long as the Shia militias are the ones that we know for sure who aren't committing atrocities, because there are some Shia militias who have committed atrocities against civilian Sunnis, and that's totally unacceptable. So, I mean, you have to get the right people, but when you find the right people to do the job, the Kurds are number one of the right people, well then, yeah, you absolutely should give them aid and you should help them out in their fight against ISIS, because everybody on the planet wants to see this oppressive terrorist group go away and be done with. So there's even more good news at the end of this story here, which is Business Insider is reporting that now Kurdish fighters are saying, we're going to Mosul. Mosul is the de facto capital of ISIS. They're like, we're going for it. We're gonna go in there. We're going to go after them. And we think we can liberate Mosul. And if that's the case, I mean, the upside is the ISIS pseudo-caliphate is obliterated. But the potential downside is you might see more, terrorism in other areas, because people who are part of ISIS disperse. They send out the call of like, well, now we want you to do terrorism in different cities around the world. And then you might see an uptick in that kind of terrorism when there's a defeat of ISIS in their what they view as their territory right now. So credit to Kurdish fighters here and to the Arab forces that, beat back ISIS in Manbij, and hopefully they'll have similar success in Mosul. And let's move forward, man. You know, it's a matter of time until hopefully you destroy the united territorial success of ISIS. The ideology is a separate conversation, and we need to beat that ideology in a different way in the realm of ideas and concepts and philosophy and in other ways. But, yes, make no mistake about it, there are some people who are TFG. And if they're TFG, what you got to do is, you know, you got to have people who confront them, and it's just got to be the right people at the right time, and you got to do it effectively. And that's exactly what happened here, and credit to the people who liberated Manbij, and I feel great for people who were just liberated. Okay, and now let's go to Jill Stein. Jill Stein went on Fox News last weekend, and she spoke about foreign policy, and she served the hosts their asses on a platter.
The strongest military ever. Right now, that military is eating up 50% of our discretionary budget. Almost half of your income tax is going to support the military. And these wars that have not made us safer, in fact, they're making us less safe. Terrorism only keeps gaining more territory, becoming more strong and more vicious. So this is a failed policy. And unfortunately, Donald Trump doesn't really stand up to that. He calls for more of the same, though you're right, he doesn't have the track record of these devastating wars that Hillary actually does.
And is that what's going to defeat ISIS? Just a little bit more peace, maybe some jobs? For them, what does a peace offensive do to defeat radical Islamic terrorists in the Middle East?
Well, first, let's remember we've spent $6 trillion, that's $75,000 per American household. So, well, I think it's important to be clear that more of a failed policy is not going to work. You cannot bomb terrorism out of existence. You have to starve it. You have to deprive it of weapons, and you have to deprive it of funding. So, unfortunately, our allies and arguably the CIA itself have played a role in providing arms, training, and funding. So we need to freeze the bank accounts. Hillary Clinton herself, as Secretary of State, identified the Saudis as still the major funder of terrorist enterprises around the world. So it's time to get clear with our allies that they need to help us fight terrorism, and that means to stop the funding, the training, and the armaments. Most of the arms supplied to the Middle East are actually coming from the U.S. and our allies. We just sold $100 billion worth of arms to the Saudis, who can then distribute them wherever they like. So we can shut down this war because it's our weapons that have enabled it to be fought.
When Fox News bobblehead talking points meet facts. Oh, Fox is definitely rethinking allowing Jill Stein on air now. They're definitely like, oh goodness, what did we do? She knows stuff. She knows stuff. This isn't like their, you know, when they have their token liberals on the panel, like Bob Beckel. Bob Beckel's like, well, we should ban all Muslims. I'm a liberal. But the liberal happens to always either not say shit and be very quiet or agree with the conservatives. Remember back when it was Hannity and Combs? And I actually like Alan Combs, so I'm being a little bit of a dick here. And his radio show is actually pretty good. So if you want to check it out, go check it out. He's pretty good. But when you put obnoxious asshole Hannity next to Combs, he just runs roughshod over him on everything. It's like, okay, your job is to be the pussy liberal, so shut the fuck up and take the abuse. They let Jill Stein on. She's like, here's what's not happening. That. Now, let me introduce you to the people's elbow, bitch, because I'm about to give you information and data and maybe even convince some of the clowns in the audience. So first of all, I love how she brings up the actual amount of money we spend on military spending. She's like, okay, your guys' answer is more war. Hey, jackass, we spend over 50% of our discretionary budget on the military. How much more would you like? You want to spend 65%? 75%? Maybe all of it? At what point would you go, you know what, I think we're safe. We've already been at war for well over a decade. So what's your answer? Maybe three more decades, and then we'll finally be good. All right now. Because it's worked so well to this point. We've been at war this whole time, and the problem of jihadism is worse. There are more jihadists today than there were when we started. So objectively, what we've done has not worked. Same results as the drug war. So we do the war on drugs, spend $1 trillion, and now people are more likely to use drugs today. That's a failure by any way you measure it. Well, same thing with the war on terror, and Jill Stein is letting that be known. And then she goes, okay, look, you guys really want to have an effect on this. You really want to get serious about fighting terrorism and limiting it as much as we possibly can. There's a very simple answer to that. The United States can stop funding Islamists, jihadists, and Saudi Arabia, but I repeat myself. So Saudi Arabia is a Wahhabi government. Their ideology is the same as ISIS. They behead people for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling. They say all atheists are terrorists. This is a draconian, backwards, ultra-conservative, fundamentalist country. And we did just give them billions of dollars worth of weapons. Why would you do that? They're massacring civilians in Yemen. Why would you do that? Why would you let them do that? Why would you let them bomb schools and hospitals? Stop arming them. If you stop arming Saudi Arabia and you stop arming the Syrian rebels, because oftentimes some of the Syrian rebels we arm either are Islamists or jihadists, or we arm people who then go in there and give the weapons to the Islamists and jihadists. Well, if you just stopped arming them, well, that would solve a lot of the problem right there. Now, let me be clear. I have no problem giving aid to people who really deserve it. We just covered the story about how the Kurds liberated Manbij in Syria from ISIS. So if you want to give aid and help out the Kurds, I'm with you 100%. If you want to help out some Shia militias who we know for sure are not committing atrocities, well, no problem with that at all. But what the U.S. has done repeatedly and consistently is we've funded the worst actors. We funded Saudi Arabia. We funded Islamists and jihadist rebels, even going back to Reagan when he armed the Mujahideen, who later became Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. There's a very easy way to stop terrorism. Stop arming terrorists. Stop funding terrorists. That's step number one. And also you could argue the stuff that we do, like the 90% civilian death rate with drones where we kill, you know, people who are not jihadists and then therefore create more jihadists, Well, if we just nip that in the bud, by definition, you're limiting terrorism because you're stopping our terrorism. So that's another way to stop it. But, yeah, she's destroying them. They have no answer. Ah, more wars, always answer, always, always, always. Dude, don't get me wrong. Somebody's got to fight ISIS. I've described that a million times. But we've proven we can't do it effectively and efficiently, and we can't limit the problem and certainly can't defeat it. It's a guerrilla warfare. How did our fight against guerrilla warriors work out in Vietnam? Not too well, right? So why not let the Kurds do it? Why not let other people in the region do it? Because it's their direct fight. You know, Tuscaloosa is not exactly threatened by ISIS right now. So, yes, Jill Stein absolutely destroyed them. Their answer is always more war. Her answer is nuanced, intelligent, rational, and based on the facts. Well done, Jill Stein. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here, Jill Stein took on the Fox News bobbleheads on another issue. We'll discuss that. And then later on, we have the terrifying story on climate change, which I have to get to. All right, guys, stay right there.
About a pound, break it down and put it in a stone. Get your swagger so bright, I don't even need light. I'm with a model, bro, and she don't even need rice. But would you believe it, she dykes. And she has me for a picture, so I gave her three strikes. Yeah, I'm the man around this motherfucker. I'm so hot, you probably catch a pan around this motherfucker. This rap game, I got my hand around this motherfucker. Yeah, I said game, but I ain't playing around this motherfucker. Yeah, I'm the best to ever do it, bitch. And you the best at never doing shit. If you the shit, then I ain't too rich. Try me and I have you, we gon' read a eulogy. I swear you can't fuck for me, but I can fuck your girl and make her love for me. Then slap for me, then kill for me, then steal for me. And of course it'll be your cash. And I've heard of that bitch who's in a body back to your ass. And we don't want no problem. Okay, you're a goon with a goon through a goblin. Yeah, it came on a beat. Fuck around and leave a nigga brain on the paper. I pop that pussy, I break it to my bed from the top of that pussy. And BB said in my bed, oh, she was savage, it's falling in my head. Man, suck my clip. Swallow my bullets and don't you spit. I am the hip-hop socialist. Life is a gamble and I'm all about my poker chips. Do you want a dose of this? I will make the most of this. F is for ferocious. Murder your associates. The topic's so appropriate. This is just where I belong. Keep a hard dick for your girlfriend or wobble on. We... And we don't want no problem. It's okay, you're a goon with a goon to a goblin. Yeah, it came on the beat. Fuck around and leave a nigga brain on the street. Ooh, I pop that pussy. I bring it to my bedroom and pop that pussy. And we be telling my bed. Ooh, came a side, baby, falling in the house. And we don't want no problem. Okay, you're a goon with a goon. We're back, y'all. Oh, let's get in as many as we can. I got an itch on my foot that I can't scratch. It's driving me crazy. Alright. Let's go right back to that same interview here because Jill Stein did such a good job.
Jill Stein took on the Fox News bobbleheads on the issue of Israel, and it was glorious.
You mentioned our allies. Both Canada and Serbia are a key ally in the region as Israel. You support a boycott of Israel, and you describe the government this way as responsible for, I'm quoting, apartheid assassination, illegal settlements, blockades, building of nuclear bombs, indefinite detention, collective punishment, and defiance of international law. My question to you is, do you think Israel is more an outlaw state than, say, Cuba is? Which is a more legitimate government?
Well, let me say this. Our policy applies to all countries,
right.
And that is where there are flagrant violations of human rights, war crimes, assassinations, and international law, then we need to stop supporting those countries to stop funding them. So we're calling for a level playing field here. Mm-hmm. Everything we say about Israel also applies to our ally, Saudi Arabia, for example, or to Egypt. In the case of Israel, we are providing $8 million a day for an army, which is an army of occupation, which is in defiance of international law. So this isn't something that just I am making up. This is the actual statements of the United Nations and international law.
But are you making a moral equivalence between Israel and Cuba, where there are gulags and jailing of dissidents? I mean, are you making that moral equation?
Well, we're not funding Cuba to the tune of $8 million a day, and that's what our policy says, is that we need to stop funding and supporting those governments that are in violation of international law. Yeah, there's lots of human rights violations going on in Cuba, in the United States, everywhere around the world.
So a lot of Democrats are mad at you.
What our policy says is that we stop funding those countries.
A lot of Democrats are mad at you.
See, they're trying to get her in a moment there where it makes headlines and people could run against it, could, argue against it. They're trying to do a gotcha moment and go, you made headlines and now everybody hates you. But she really handled that masterfully because they set it up in a way and they posed the question in a way where there's no good answer. So Cuba, for example, they're horrific and disastrous and terrible in many ways on social policy and domestic policy. You know, I happen to disagree with just how controlled their economy is and how much redistribution there is. It's not a social democracy. It is more of a communist nation. So in that way, they're really oppressive. They're super oppressive when it comes to free speech and free, expression and free press. And you have to kind of parrot the line of the government. So that's another way in which they're massively repressive. They do jail political dissidents. That's another way in which they're horrific. But you can't argue that Cuba's foreign policy, for example, is worse than Israel's foreign policy. Israel is doing occupation. They are doing oppression. And they are doing a de facto apartheid state. So they're both bad in different ways. And when you look at Israel, they're actually pretty good on domestic issues. You know, they often talk about how, Israel, we're the only democracy in the Middle East that cares about gay rights. Yeah, I'm going to give that to you. You're right. You're much better on the issue of gay rights than surrounding Muslim nations in the region. No question about it. But again, understand there are different issues at play here. So Israel is better domestically, they're better economically, they're worse on foreign policy. Cuba's bad when it comes to domestic issues, when it comes to social issues, but their foreign policy, they're not doing occupation and oppression of another group of people. So they're just trying to get her to say, I think Cuba is more free than Israel. And they go, Jill Stein, crazy, stupid liberal, stupid liberal, stupid liberal. You know, God forbid you actually try to have a nuanced conversation. And also, I love one of the other things Jill said there, too. She said, okay, understand something. We care about international law, and we think it also applies to us and our allies. In Fox News, that you're not allowed to say that. Nobody's ever even thought of that in Fox News. Not a single person on Fox News has ever thought, you know, maybe the law should apply to us and our allies, too. No, the default assumption is, well, obviously we're above it. Hello, we're us. So we're the good guys no matter what. No matter what we do, actions don't matter when it comes to us. So if our ally does occupation, if our ally does apartheid, if our ally goes into Gaza and kills you know, 80% civilians, according to the UN, in their most recent bomb fest. Well, that's okay, because it's our guy. So he meant well, so let's overlook all of it, and it's a fucking wash. Jill's like, no, international law applies to us. It applies to our allies, Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt. So let's keep that in mind. And then the best point she made is, well, your question is preposterous, because we're not funding Cuba. So we're not responsible for the fucked up things they do. That's got nothing to do with us. With Israel, we give them $3 billion a year. So this idea of like, well, let's talk about the relative problems with both. Well, but one of those we're at least partly responsible for because we fund it. And so we're signing on to it. It's the same thing with our business deals with Saudi Arabia. We just gave them over $1 billion in weapons. So we are more responsible for their fucked up actions than the actions of a government that we got nothing to do with. So that's the reasonable conversation to have. Hey, you're asking me to compare two countries. We're not responsible for the actions of those countries. We're partly responsible for the actions of the other one. So, yeah, I'm more concerned about that one because, you know, I'm the one who's got the stick in my eye. You know, we go around and lecture everybody about altruism and human rights and doing the right thing, and then we're arming this nation, which is doing occupation and setting up an apartheid state. That's the problem. But again, Fox News bobbleheads right over the head. They're like, yeah, but Cuba bad, Israel good. What's why do we need any more nuance than that? Cuba bad, Israel good. You no think Cuba bad, Israel good? You crazy liberal is what you are. And she comes with a fucking mountain of nuance and good points, and they simply don't give a fuck because they got their talking points and they're sticking to them. Okay. Okay, now, let's go to terrible situation in Yemen. I got another story for you. So the other day on the show, we discussed how the United States is trying to give billions of dollars worth of weapons and funding to Saudi Arabia. Obama approved a $1.15 billion weapons deal just the other week. And there's barely a whimper about this in the press. You know, it's getting very little coverage. And what's so amazing is that you have people who talk about, how do we fight terrorism? How do we stop it? I don't understand. This is, why do they hate us? All these terrible things. Okay. There's a very, very simple way to try to nip this terrorism in the bud to an extent and reduce the number of terror attacks around the world. Maybe stop funding a Wahhabi government that has the same ideology as ISIS and calls all atheist terrorists and says that they kill people for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling. Maybe that's an idea, you know. It seems so simple and so straightforward. Oh! Don't fund the people with the same ideology as ISIS. And by the way, they turn around with their gargantuan piles of money and their weapons, and they say, Syrian refugee crisis. Ah, yeah, I see. We're not going to take any, but go to Europe and we'll fund Wahhabi mosques for you there. So this ultra-toxic, poisonous version of Islam, they're like, we're going to build mosques that preach that in Europe. Oh, come on, man. It's like a bad joke, and we keep giving them weapons and keep funding them and keep having business deals with them. It's a terrible idea. So I just mentioned we just approved another weapons deal. Well, what news do we get today? This is from World Post. Quote, at least 10 children were killed and 21 injured in northern Yemen on Saturday, aid group Doctors Without Borders said, in what the country's dominant Houthi group said was a Saudi-led airstrike on a school. We give them the weapons, we give them the planes, we give them the arms. They turn around, immediately start bombing schools and killing children in Yemen. And this isn't like a, who could have saw it coming? What are you guys talking about? No, because there's already been over 6,000 people killed in Yemen, more than half of them are civilians. The targets they've hit schools, they've hit schools for the blind, they've hit hospitals, they've hit mosques. Basically everywhere where you are not supposed to hit, they hit, and that was the fucking point. And they couldn't do this without our assistance. So, again, you want to stop terrorism? There's a very easy way. Stop participating in it. Stop, and that's, to be fair, originally a Noam Chomsky line, but in this case it applies perfectly. Stop arming Saudi Arabia. Stop helping them with the coordinates on the map. Stop not giving a fuck about civilian casualties. Whenever this issue comes up at the UN, it gets quashed. Why? Because Saudi Arabia leads the UN Human Rights Panel. How ridiculous is that? So, again, do we want to be serious about this, or do we just want to do fake outrage and you know, rhetoric every time there's a terror attack that happens, every time civilians are killed and it's Western civilians? There are very simple steps to take to reduce the effectiveness and the impact and how widespread this toxic ideology of fundamentalist Islam is. There's ways to fight back against it that don't even require us flying somewhere with fighter jets and bombing the shit out of stuff. It just requires us not funding terrible people, not helping these terrible people do their dirty work, and not allowing... We've armed Saudi, and Saudi turns around and arms al-Qaeda in Yemen because they're fighting the Shia Houthi rebels. They go, hey, we need Sunni militants. There's Sunni militants on the ground. What are we going to do? Not arm them? How about that? But no, we still do it, and then we are shocked every time we find out, oh my goodness, look, this jihadist group is well armed. How did that happen? Yeah, I wonder how that happened. Okay. All right, let's go to the Washington Post here. There's a very important story about climate change. The Washington Post has a terrifying story out on the issue of climate change. They report here, record-shattering temperatures this summer have scorched countries from Morocco to Saudi Arabia and beyond. In coming decades, UN officials and climate scientists predict that the mushrooming populations of the Middle East and North Africa will face extreme water scarcity, temperatures almost too hot for human survival, and other consequences of global warming. If that happens, conflicts and refugee crises far greater than those now underway are probable. Parts of the United Arab Emirates and Iran experienced the heat index, a measurement that factors in humidity as well as temperature, that soared to 140 degrees in July, and Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, recorded an all-time high temperature of nearly 126 degrees. Temperatures in Kuwait and Iraq startled observers. On July 22nd, the mercury climbed to 129 degrees in the southern Iraqi city of Basra. A day earlier, it reached 129.2 in Kuwait. If confirmed by the World Meteorological Organization, the two temperatures would be the hottest ever recorded in the Eastern Hemisphere. They go on to explain that by the end of the century, many of these places will simply be uninhabitable. There's already people dying in Iraq from the heat because they're a relatively poor country for the region, obviously a war-torn country, and many don't have AC. And if you don't have AC and it's over 100 degrees for however many days in a row, how much of that can a person take? So a lot of people are just dropping dead. Oh, no, 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 this is not good. This is not good. When you read an article like this, you begin to connect the dots and you see exactly what Bernie Sanders was talking about when he said, we need to treat climate change like it's a World War II level threat. I mean, think about that. Those are really strong words. The Nazis are the worst people that ever existed. Poisonous ideology in history. And he's like, no, we have to treat climate change like that. Well, why? Well, now you're beginning to see some of the reasons why. You don't realize the practical implications, or they don't land until it's too late. So they're saying, guys, we're already seeing record temperatures in these places that can't handle them, and by the end of the century, many of these places will be uninhabitable. Simply uninhabitable. Humans can't live there. So then you want to talk about a refugee crisis. We're just warming up with a Syrian refugee crisis and one war-torn nation. What happens when every nation in that region can't afford to be there anymore, can't survive there? What happens when you have wars over water? Ooh, what a scary thought that is. What a scary thought that is. What happens when the price of food worldwide soars, skyrockets, because, you know, the supply is strained? It's harder to produce these things. Limited supply, and the demand is up. People often talk about rising sea levels like the main problem with climate change. I always found that weird because it's like, yeah, that's a huge problem, and we're going to lose some very important cities at a certain point in time. But people think they just move inward and move inland more, and there's that taken care of. It's kind of true. But that, like, that's just the beginning of it. When you have wars over water, when you have food prices skyrocketing, when you have, you know, forced migration, relocation of all these different people, all a new refugee crisis, way worse than this one, then people go, oh, motherfucker, maybe we should have paid more attention to this and fixed it. Yeah, you think? I don't know about you guys. I think it's time to move towards 100% renewable technology, green technology. That's what we have to do. It's not a choice. It's not a question. We're beginning to see the effects now, and it ain't good. Okay. Okay, let's do it. Let me try to squeeze in one, maybe two more. Brian Fisher, we haven't spoken about him in a while. He's always fun. Christian fundamentalist radio host Brian Fisher made some comments about gender here. This is gender equality. And oh boy, this is going to be good.
I think you can make a pretty good biblical case. That's what I happen to believe. You know, I'm not saying that there's one verse in the Bible you can go to that says definitively that only men are supposed to hold political office, but that's always the pattern in the Word of God. The kings were all males. When you had a departure from that with Jezebel and Athaliah, was not a good thing, did not work out well. Leadership in the church is reserved for men. Leadership in the home is reserved for men. In other words, in God's economy, He has designed leadership and authority in society and in the church and in the home to be exercised by men. You know, you had one female judge, that was Deborah, and she only got sucked into that because the men were such wimps. And she told them, look, because of the way you're going about this, you're dragging me into this war to be your kind of lucky rabbit's foot. And because you're doing it that way, the honor for this battle is going to go to a woman. You've given up your opportunity to receive the honor that justly goes to warriors who vindicate themselves on the field of battle. So I think you can make a good case that leadership in culture, society, politically, as well as in the home, that is something in God's economy that's reserved for men. Now, I understand that there are Christians out there who disagree with me. I'm not speaking for anybody but myself. You know, when I've verbalized these things before, I've just gotten blessed. I mean, I know a little bit about what Jeremy's talking about. Is that I just get blistered for saying this anytime it happens. So maybe Jeremy's wondering, what if somebody had the courage, you know,
courage,
to go on national TV, somebody of some kind of prominence or visibility, and said, look, I'm going to vote for Trump because he's a man. I don't believe that women should be entrusted with high political office. See, what would happen to him? That's a position I haven't to take. Nobody's asked me what I think about that. But his question is, what happens if somebody says that in public? And my guess is they would get crucified to within an inch of their very lives.
That's amazing. That last point is so stunning because he flips who the victim is like that. He said, what if somebody had the courage, he used the word courage, to come out there and say, I'm voting for Trump simply because he's a man. So if you have the courage to be openly sexist and misogynistic and say all women, by definition, cannot lead, what if somebody had the courage to say that? Well, they would be crucified in the media, oh, to within an inch of their life. They would be so oppressed. They'd be such victims. Why can't you leave me alone to victimize other people? Why can't you stop oppressing me as I oppress others? Wait, why does your oppression not count? That's how they think. They're like, no, if I say all women should be kept away from positions of power, that is not, of course, oppressing women. But if you tell me I disagree with what you said there, oh my God, you're oppressing me so badly! This is the Christian victim complex in the U.S., and fundamentalist Christians feel it through and through. And this is the same thing that you see in, countries that are Islamic theocracies, where the right-wing theocrats always feel like they're constantly oppressed. If somebody comes along and says, hey, maybe we should treat gays decently, like, oh, you're oppressing me because my ideology says we shouldn't treat them equally. So therefore, by trying to stop me from oppressing them, you are oppressing me. They always flip it on its head. They always flip it on its head. And what this reminded me of is there's a hashtag that was just going around for a while now, probably over a week, and it's hashtag stop enslaving Saudi women. And so you and I sit here, we listen to Brian Fisher say this shit, and it's scary, and it's gross, and it's obviously, by definition, sexist and misogynistic when you say no women should hold any positions of power, whether it be in the home, whether it be in the government, and all that stuff. We listen to that, and we're fucking mortified, because that's so at odds with liberal secular values. Well, understand, there are countries, like Saudi Arabia, for example, where it's run by Brian Fishers. The entire leadership in the country is Brian Fisher. They think, okay, no, we need laws to make sure that these fucking whore women cover up. I don't want to see your hair. I don't want to see an eyelash. I'm going to lose it in my pants if I do. If you're a Saudi female citizen, you have to cover up. End of conversation. And what happens? In all these different cases, the oppression of women and the victimization of women, it stems from fundamentalist religious ideology. So in Brian's case, he's citing Bible verses that say men have to control the household and men need to be in control. He actually misses one verse. There's a verse that says that women can't teach men anything. So you can make the argument, obviously, no women teachers are allowed, but also you could argue no women politicians, because if you're a politician and you're making the laws, in at least a few ways, that's teaching the next generation, here's the laws you have to abide by. So they could say, hey, though, just based on that, gone. No women leaders. In the Bible, women are also supposed to cover their head, too, by the way. But mostly, most denominations of Christianity have gotten past that part, or they just ignore it, or whatever the case is. But when you go to Islam, you have, of course, there are some hadiths that one of them says women are, quote, mentally deficient. There's also inheritance rules that say women have to get less than men and all this stuff. And, dude, stop. Your myths, your fairy tales aren't true, and as a result of it, you're doing real harm to real people on this planet. Yes, Brian Fisher should have no power, and he should be marginalized, and he should be mocked. And obviously, the countries where it's all Brian Fisher's running the fucking government, they need to, you know, come into the year 2016 and understand that's not acceptable. Your draconian beliefs are draconian and stupid and wrong, and you're using that to oppress women and keep women down. Women shouldn't be forced to cover up. They should be allowed to drive. They're not in Saudi Arabia. They should have all the same rights as men. They shouldn't need fucking guardians to go to one place to another. This is obvious. And you shouldn't, like the hashtag says, continue enslaving Saudi women. Stop treating them like second-class citizens. Treat them like human beings because they are human beings. And understand there's no evidence and no reason to support your idea that men should run everything and they're just better. In fact, I would argue in these specific countries, based on the actions of the men, the women are better, at least right now. So, you know, it's the most ironic thing ever, and it drives me crazy in every realm. Well, I see this often with white supremacists, too. You see a bunch of idiot white supremacists wearing their goofy gowns in the KKK, drooling on it, drinking beer, farting all day. They have an IQ of 80, and they're out there like, we're the superior race, man! You're living proof that indeed you're not. You're living proof. You contradict your own fucking theory on the world. was the same thing with these fucking Muslim fundamentalists in Saudi Arabia. They're like, well, we have to keep women down, cover them up, don't let them drive. They need a guardian to go places. Don't give them any rights. There's rules about you can't visit a graveyard to see a loved one for whatever fucking bullshit theological reason. So the men are enforcing these stupid, stupid rules and the entire time going, well, we need to be in control. We're smarter, obviously. If you were really that smart, you wouldn't be enforcing the dumbest rules on the planet. So again, you're living proof that indeed you're not superior. You're not the superior gender. You prove that we're not a superior gender, you moron. So that's where we're at right now. Yes, stop enslaving Saudi women. Yes, stop fucking having countries where Brian Fisher is basically the emperor and he gets to rule over everything. These ideas are stupid and they should be marginalized and they should be shamed. All right, I'm out of time, guys. Love you. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same place, everybody. Everybody have a great rest of the day. And tomorrow, I didn't get to one story I had prepped for you today. Tomorrow we'll discuss the new scandal with U.S. military bases around the world. And obviously I'll have a bunch of other stuff for you, including likely 8,000 stories on Trump and Clinton. Yay, you have that to look forward to. Those are sarcastic yay, if you couldn't tell. So anyway, much love. Mwah. I'm out. See everybody tomorrow. Peace.